Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and this is Day 12 coverage of the Iditarod here on Mushing Radio. You're listening to us over on KVRF 89.5 in the Mattsu Valley, radiofreepalmer.org. You can find all of our episodes over on iTunes, as well as on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for Dog Works Radio. And calling in from a parking lot, as is I, is Alex Stein, calling from Southern California. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. We've seen a lot of teams come in since we were on the air about 24 hours ago, a little over 24 hours ago. Still a bunch of teams on the trail. I do not believe that there were any scratches, or at least there have not been when I checked last. So we still have a fair number of teams that are still out there on the trail. Teams starting to come in, moving up the coast. There are still, I believe, three or four teams that are coming into Unalakleet. We've had a lot of people contacting us in the past few days and all throughout this coverage, talking about asking questions, talking about things that they like, things that they would like to see covered. One of our fans mentioned something that we've talked about in past years, but I do not believe we've mentioned yet this year, which is the tradition of fans sending pizza to race teams in Unalakleet. And I just wanted to mention that briefly. There's a pizza place called Peace on Earth Pizza in Unalakleet, and every year during the Iditarod, people will call in with pizza orders for mushers who are coming in. So they'll track the mushers on the GPS, figure out approximately when they're going to come in, call and order and pay for a pizza from this pizza place that will actually bring the pizza out to the musher at the checkpoint. So the musher is coming in and you know, usually this is unexpected because it's hard to plan that really far in advance, but they will come in and one of their fans from somewhere in the United States or sometimes somewhere else in the world will have bought them a pizza that is then delivered to them at the checkpoint.
How is that for 30 minutes or less? You know, Alex, one of our longtime fans, her name was Allie Marie. She passed away a couple of years ago, I believe from complications from diabetes or another illness. And we told the story about her back then. And I guess they're still carrying on that tradition. She had a Facebook group that she was a part of, and the folks there are still sending pizzas out in her memory. I guess they've sent out 6+ pizzas this year. What a great story. What a way to commemorate such a big fan. I know we talked a lot about Allie Marie several years ago when she was, you know, really a big fan of the race, didn't we?
And, you know, there's a number of other ways that people can interact with the race and with racers. For many, many years, people have been able to send what they refer to as mushergrams. So you call the phone room in Anchorage, and then eventually they move it up to Nome, I believe, which is 907-248-MUSH. So you call that number, and you're connected with one of the volunteers there, and you can send a message to a musher, which then will be delivered further down the trail. So usually they're sent to the large hubs like Unalakleet, McGrath, or they're sent to the finish line. And if the mushers are there and have a chance to read them, they're given these sort of brief messages, which usually are messages of encouragement or people saying how you know they're rooting for a particular team, or they want the team to keep going. I've been told by a couple of people that they've gotten some of these on the trail, and it's been a real pick me up for them. If they don't get a chance to read it, I believe they're taken to Nome and then given to them at the finisher's banquet. But this is a way that's been going on for a long time for people to be able to communicate their thoughts to their favorite mushers out on the trail.
Very cool stuff. You know, Alex, I think all is right with the world. Not only are we both sitting in parking lots at supermarkets about 3,000 miles apart, I'm hosting the show tonight on my iPad. So it is snowing here in Wasilla, the first snow we've gotten in quite a while. Not a lot stuck here, but it has stuck up at my house in Willow. But you know what else is interesting, Alex, is it looks like all of the big-time reporters from Iditarod have packed it up, and they're on their way home tonight. But you and I are still plugging away, doing this every night for all of those back-of-the-packers. We try to stick it out and tell these stories, at least through the banquet. I think that's something special that we're still on the air while everybody else has packed up and gone home, when there's still 40 or so odd teams out on the trail.
Right. And, you know, we say a lot that as interesting as the people at the front of the pack are, and they can be very, very interesting. Certainly this year we've had a lot of really exciting stuff happen at the front of the pack. But as interesting as that is, I know for me, and I think for you as well, our hearts are really with the middle and the back of the packers.
There's
a couple of people that I just wanted to mention really quickly. Karin Hendrickson, who is one of my favorite mushers, a little over a year and a half ago was out training and was hit by a car and broke several bones or vertebrates in her back, and was, you know, had a long and arduous rehabilitation, was not able to run Iditarod last year, had, I believe, Brian Bears ran her team for her last year, and this year she started training, and she said that she was really happy to be back on the runners. And I saw her at a fundraiser down here in Southern California where some of her family is, and she was saying that she really didn't know that she would be able to do it, to run Iditarod. And then she signed up for the race. The race came, and she's been doing very, very well, and I believe is either – last I checked was in White Mountain and is either just leaving White Mountain or will be leaving White Mountain in a couple of hours. And the toughness and the perseverance for someone to come back from a major injury like that and be able to run Iditarod again is really just remarkable. And I saw an interview with her right before the race started, and she said, and I think this sums up how a lot of people feel about the race, she said, you know, this is what I do. This is who I am. So I'm going to do it.
Yeah, such an awesome story. And, you know, Alex, up until rather recently, she was in a full back brace, you know, one of those two-sided back braces that people wear that have broken their back, you know, the plastic or fiberglass sided one. She is a Willow resident, as I, and I've seen her around town a few times, you know, during the training season, and she would still occasionally have that on up until, I don't know, maybe Thanksgiving or so. She was still wearing that from time to time. So, you know, this is fresh off of that injury, and just a quick clarification, you said that she was training when this happened. The way this sort of went down is she was running on the side of the road, which a lot of folks do, up in between Willow and Talkeetna with her dog team on an ATV. And a car was going around a corner and slipped very close to the railroad tracks up there, went off of the road and struck her and her team. and she flew off the ATV, and from my understanding, it knocked her out of her boots, and she was laying there on the side of the road, pretty much in a ditch, and they had to get the paramedics and everybody there and get her down to the hospital, and that's no small feat in of itself, especially in bad weather. The hospital, in relation to where she was, is about 40 miles, 45 miles away. So it was not something where, we'll just load her up and take her down the road to the next hospital. They had to pack her up and move her relatively quickly. And, if you have a broken back, broken neck, it's very, very common. There can be paralysis and all that. And here she is just a year and a half or so later, and she's out mushing the Iditarod. And I know, Alex, you talk about it a lot, about these guys just being so freaking tough, and I think she's one of them.
She absolutely is. And when the accident happened, her because of the way the dogs were connected to the ATV or the way they were struck, the dogs were separated from her and from the ATV. So the dogs essentially were loose and were running around. And when she came to and she got her cell phone out and she started calling people, because her first concern was, my dogs have escaped. I've got to make sure that someone comes and gets all of my dogs. So
right.
Even before the paramedics got there and even before she was dealing with her own injuries, she was still making sure that her dogs were taken care of and were okay. And that is amazing, and I think that really tells you pretty much everything you need to know about how people who raise and run dog teams think of their dogs.
Right. Tonight we're going to talk about Jason Campo, and he was the last musher as we went on to air to cross under the arch in Nome. He finished the race in 10 days, 4 hours, and 10 minutes. But before we talk about Jason, I want to talk about some other toughness out there. Nathan Schroeder, he has stopped in safety just 25 miles from Nome. Now, this is another tough guy, Alex. He is a John Bear Grease Marathon champ times over. He's an Iditarod veteran. This guy is about as tough as they come. And, he stopped in safety, very similar to how the dogs have stopped in White Mountain and further down the trail with Michelle Phillips. The dogs just said, hey, you know what? We're here. We're done here for a while, boss. We're going to take it easy. But what ended up happening, from what I read on his Facebook page right before we went on air, one of his family or handlers or somebody that's associated with his team went out from Nome to safety to check on him to see how he was doing, because he's been there for so long. And it's my understanding that when they got there, not only are the dogs very ill, but so is Nathan. And from what they're reporting, he's there. He's pretty sick. He's throwing up blood. He's going to give it a shot here in a little bit to see if he can go. Remember, it's only 25 miles. That's about, about 2-3 hours tops on a dog team. But he says if he is unable to do it, he's going to try it in the morning. And one of the comments was the race officials there are making sure that they're looking in on him and making sure he's still able to make conscious decisions about his dog team. That tells me if a person says we need to make sure he can make conscious decisions about his dog team, that this guy's pretty ill, but he still wants to go forward. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and, it is on the one hand, he's very, very close to the end, but he's still far enough away that he needs to be able to be conscious and to be making good decisions and to be doing everything that he would normally need to do down the trail for another, let's say, 3 hours or so. And some teams will make it between safety and Nome in 2.5 hours, but it's generally around 3 hours. You plan on about 3 hours, but it's a little bit less then it's a little bit less. But you've got to be able to, you know, be standing up, to be able to know if something's going wrong with your dogs, to be able to stop and snack the dogs if you need to. So it is both tantalizingly close and far enough away that if there is anything seriously going wrong with you, and certainly if he's vomiting and vomiting up blood, that's a pretty serious thing, then you want to make sure that he's able to still take care of his dogs.
Right. And, you know, safety, it's a checkpoint that most people don't very long. I know in the last couple of years, there have been some pretty bad storms. We've talked about the stories with Jeff and Allie over the last couple of years, how, you know, Dallas sort of blew by Allie when she was at safety, and how Jeff had problems past safety and started walking back to the checkpoint because of a very severe storm. But being only 25 miles out from the finish, most mushers aren't sending out a large drop bag full of dog food and snacks and all sorts of other things because they're only a couple, 3 hours away from Nome. They aren't anticipating having to stay there for any amount of time. Usually it's just to check in, maybe hang a dollar on the wall at the roadhouse there. But other than that, they're putting on their bib as required. I believe it's required there at safety, is it not, Alex?
Right.
And then they're on their way down the trail.
Right, and there have been enough cases where teams have stalled out at safety that there's a little bit of a superstition that you don't want to spend very much time there. So you'll see people who are in and out of there in 2 minutes or 5 minutes, and that's not at all unusual if you look at how much time people spend in safety. And in fact, when you start getting someone who's spending more than 10 or 15 minutes there, people start to worry a little bit.
And safety is also close enough where fans can take snow machines and other types of tours out to the mushers. I mean, it's only, you know, maybe a 15-minute ride or so on a snow machine across the ice there, then right there to the safety checkpoint. So it's a very fan-friendly area for the mushers. You know, I've seen lots of pictures over the years where they're greeted by family and friends out there, and then they'll, you know, give high fives and how you doing and hugs and whatnot. And then the fans or the family will jump on the machine and rush back to the finish line in Nome and be there ready to greet their mushers as they pull into the finish line.
Right. And, you know, one other thing that I wanted to mention that people might have seen, there were some videos showing Allie Zirkle doing this, but it is not at all uncommon. Let me start again. It's very common, especially if a team is not really in a race for a slot. So if you have people running together on the ice, running together up Front Street or very, very close together, they might not necessarily do this. But it's very common when there's no one immediately behind you that people will stop either on the sea ice before they come up to Front Street in Nome, or sometimes on the hills before they go down to the sea ice. And mushers will just stop and take a few minutes to go up and down the line and to have a few last minutes alone with dogs so that they can thank their dogs, so that they can talk to their dogs. Sometimes they'll tell the dogs, okay, we're coming into civilization now, and there's going to be a lot of people, and you haven't seen a lot of people for a while. But it is very common for the mushers to just take a few minutes and thank the dogs before they finish. And I think that this is something that certainly long-term fans and people who are close followers of the sport are aware of, but casual fans might not be as aware of the fact that there is such a strong bond between the mushers and their dogs, and this is one way that plays out.
Right. So very quickly, Alex, I'm going to run down some of the folks that are still out there on the trail. We just talked about Nathan Schroeder there in safety. Tor Albrightson has left White Mountain, as well as Martin Boozer and Karin Hendrickson. In White Mountain right now are the Barrington twins, Christy and Anna Barrington, as well as Justin Savedas. And then we have Paige Dronby and Cody Strath. Next, also in White Mountain. And then Didi Genro has left Elam on the way to White Mountain. And then towards the back of the pack there, we still have Ellen Halverson in the Red Lantern position. She is on the trail to Unicolete from Caltech, as well as Mary Helwig, who we spoke about last night, Indy Galea, Billy Snodgrass, Kristen Bacon, and Kim Franklin. Just north of there, or I guess that would be west of there, is Larry Doherty, who we spoke about a couple of nights ago. He is on the trail from Shaktulik on his way to Koyuk. We have not had any mushers scratch in, I guess, the last 48 hours or so. It's almost two full days on the trail where no one has scratched. That's a pretty important statistic. Usually you don't see this long in the race where nobody scratches. So I think that says several things, Alex. It shows either a really great trail or really good dog care out on the trail, which is obviously happening. The mushers are in good health. The dogs are in good health. Everything is clicking along just fine. And I'm happy to see that nobody has scratched in the last couple of days.
Yeah, and in fact, this race has not seen very many scratches in general. Sometimes it's not at all uncommon to have between 25% and 30% of the field will scratch, and I believe we've only had 12 or 13 scratches out of a field of 85. So that is,
yeah,
that is very low. Yeah, and that's very low. And I think really speaks to the great job that the people have done in preparing the trail and grooming the trail and making sure that the trail is just in as good shape as it could be. And I have to say again, at the beginning of the race, I thought we would be seeing 30 or 35 scratches in the first few days just because of the lack of snow. And the fact that we didn't just goes to show how much effort the Iditarod put into making sure that there was a good trail.
Right. So, Alex, let's jump into the Jason Campo story. Being where you're at, do you have your notes available where you can do this, sitting at the supermarket? Awesome.
I do.
All right, let's talk about Jason.
Jason was born and raised in Ottawa. He went to the University of New Brunswick on a hockey scholarship, got a BA in business, played hockey both in college, and then he played pro hockey for a couple of years with the North Bay Centennials of the Ontario Hockey League, which I guess is considered one of the bigger minor leagues that feeds into the NHL. He then, after his hockey career ended, formed two companies, is very active in business. He'd always wanted to get involved in mushing dogs. He had seen dog mushing when he was a kid, but had been too involved in hockey to really pursue that. And then a few years ago, he and his wife and his twin daughters moved to a ranch near Calgary, started doing some races. They formed kennels to race, and additionally, one of his major goals is to work with kids, especially underprivileged kids, using mushing and the exposure to dogs as a way of teaching them about goal setting, working together, and teamwork. We've seen a lot of mushers who do school presentations, and it is always a lot of fun for kids because, first of all, most of the time the mushers will bring a dog or several dogs with them, and kids always like being around the dogs. And there is something, as I think you know from your non-mushing work, there's something very amazing and therapeutic about dogs, and that's why dogs are such great service animals, and dogs are so great. There are programs now where dogs come in and do hospital visits, and there is something about being with a dog that can be extremely calming for people. So that is a big part of what he's trying to do in his kennel. They named the kennel Atka, which means guardian spirit. So there is an emphasis on service as well. His wife, Jennifer, has raced a couple of races herself, and at least with the information that's up on his website, has won all of the races that she has been in so far, and she is training also to run the Iditarod either next year or the year after. Jason has run the a lot of races like the John Bear Grease. He was runner-up in the John Bear Grease to Nathan Schroeder, whom we just talked about in safety, and they have been running together a lot during this Iditarod. Last year was his rookie year in the Iditarod. He finished 18th. This year, 35th. Not as good, but it was a much more competitive and faster race. So 35th for someone in their second year is a very, very good finish. He ran the Yukon Quest this year, finished 7th. Last year, he also ran the Quest and was in the top 10. And perhaps most importantly, when Jake Berkowitz decided that he wanted to get out of mushing in 2014, he sold all of his dogs. And essentially, Jason Campo bought the A-team of dogs that Jake Berkowitz was running Iditarod with. And Berkowitz has been mentoring Jason and checking up on him in the past 2 years and going to visit his dogs and working with him on running, getting everything set and running and giving him advice. In the past, Jake had been doing updates on Jason's Facebook page, but this year Jake was actually doing a column on Iditarod for the ADN. So he wasn't doing that, but was reporting from out on the trail. Jason Campo is a very matter-of-fact musher. He is someone who seems to have a very business attitude towards mushing. He sets specific goals and then goes to meet the goals. So it's a very matter-of-fact way of looking at mushing and dividing it up into tasks and subtasks. And certainly he's been fairly successful for someone who's only run the Iditarod twice. And I think that as he carries on with breeding some of his own dogs and raising up his own dogs, he has 45 now, we should be seeing a lot from him and his kennel over the next 4 or 5 years, certainly.
And his website is jasoncampo.com. You can find that right in his bio on Iditarod.com. You know, you talked about him racing in the John Bear Grease Marathon, coming in second to Nathan Schroeder. Nathan, I believe, has won that race 4 times. And we briefly talked about the Bear Grease on a previous episode, well before Iditarod. That race is one tough mid-distance race, maybe the toughest mid-distance race in the lower 48. You're pretty much running up and down pretty steep hills for 350 miles along the north shore of Minnesota. So you have very cold temperatures. You have all of the wind and weather that's coming off of Lake Superior. And it is a race that is not for the timid. And if he can come in second to that, second to a very well-refined team that has won it multiple times in with the Schroeder kennels, I think that really says something about Jason and his not only his training ethic, but the dog team that he has. If he can do so well in such a tough race there. I foresee him doing very well in the coming years in Iditarod and Quest and whatever he partakes in. I did not know that his wife was training for that. That's very interesting. You know, we've talked a lot, Alex, about the husband and wife teams out there and the sisters teams and the, you know, the kennel partners teams and all of that. But it's pretty interesting when you have, you know, a mother with young twins and their supporting dad out there on the race who didn't know much about mushing until just a couple of years ago. He was pretty much a hockey player and a businessman, and now we have the whole family wanting to do Iditarod. I think that's pretty special.
Yeah, and they talk about how for them mushing is really a total family affair. So they all come and they help out and they handle at the start of races, and it really is something that they are doing together as a family. That is a big outdoor activity.
Right. Alex, we are recording now, so we're no longer streaming. You know, I'm looking here at the standings right now. I would tend to believe that at least, I don't know, 51 or 52 teams will be in Nome by the time we go on the air tomorrow. Do you have any thoughts on that? That's well over three-quarters of the field at that point. I think that's a record-breaking pace. Not only did the front runners do it, but if we can have, you know, 52 or 53 teams into Nome on Thursday, where typically people are strolling in very close to the banquet on Sunday, I think that this may be a record-breaking year even for the back of the Packers. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so, and it looks like we could definitely see the Red Lantern coming in maybe sometime Friday or late Friday or Saturday, which would be very, very quick, and I think would be close to a record.
Wow. Very interesting. So, Alex, who do you want to talk about tomorrow? I know we have a lot of people still out on the trail and a whole bunch more stories, I'm sure, but we only have Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We only have four more days on, so I guess we need to be a little selective on who we're going to talk about here to finish up our coverage.
Yeah, I actually have not selected someone for tomorrow, so if anyone has suggestions for someone that they want to hear about, certainly send that to us. As you mentioned, we're probably going to have a lot of people come in the next 24 hours, but there's still a lot of race left, and we'll be bringing that to you.
Very good. Well, Alex, thank you very much for joining us from the supermarket parking lot where I'm at. I'm getting ready to head home here. It's about 8:30 Alaska time. So if we have enough snow, maybe I'll hook up a dog team and take them for a quick run. Who knows? But until then, Alex, we'll see you tomorrow night, okay?
All right. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you. On behalf of my co-host, Alex Stein, we'll see you guys tomorrow night for day 13 of our coverage. Talk to you guys then. Goodbye.